Good morning, Crime Con. Please welcome to the stage the only gang your grandma would love for you to join, the Mystery Ink Team. And shut your dirty mouths. They are joined by the fabulous Cheryl Mac McCollum.
Well, hello, everybody. Look at that.
Hi, hello, and howdy.
Seats are set low, aren't they?
Hello, hello.
I think
good morning,
they're normal
good morning.
Size.
Right?
Ooh, y'all are diehards if y'all are here at 9 o'clock, honey, on day 3.
9 o'clock in the morning.
I think somebody hates us.
Elise,
get up this
I'm room. Calling her out right now.
We're highly caffeinated.
Oh, my gosh, I know.
The makeup team had a job to do this morning.
So, everyone, of course, we have our good friend Cheryl here. Cheryl and I are actually two of the only people who have been to all the crime cons in the U.S.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And I'm going to tell you a quick, funny story that Cheryl probably does not remember. When I first met Cheryl, I was with a bunch of podcasters. And there's something about people from the South. So, Josh and I are from Indiana. So is Kim. And Cheryl is just so sweet, and so you can just tell that she doesn't always listen to every podcast and every TV show and documentary, but she'll always pretend like she does. And she loves it. So I was with a bunch of podcasters, and she's like, oh, watch your show. Oh, I love that. That's so good. And so I was like, okay, Cheryl, I hear you. So I gave her a fake podcast name, and she's like, oh, that is so good. That's a good one.
My love favorite.
It. Yeah, yeah. But I loved it, and I never got to cash in on that until right now. But a second part to that story is the next year I got to, do you remember when I went to Atlanta with you? You don't remember that. See,
hey,
she just forgets about it.
They sometimes blend a little bit.
A little bit, yeah. So Cheryl.
Go ahead with your next lie.
Yeah.
So Cheryl invites me out to Atlanta with Wendy, who co-hosts my crime podcast, Foul Play. And we go out there, and I only have ever met her sort of in passing at CrimeCon. I knew she was, you know, into the CSI stuff, and we get out there, and people smoke a lot of marijuana in Atlanta. I had no idea.
We're innocent.
I know, so innocent. So Wendy and I stay in this real nice place. The next morning, Cheryl's picking us up from this place. And so many people were smoking marijuana that as we walked through the halls, all I could think about is this police officer is going to show up and I'm going to get in there and I'm going to be smelling like pot. And Wendy's like, oh, you'll be fine, Shane. She's British. So you'll be fine, Shane. And I was like, okay. So Cheryl pulls up. I'm nervous as a bee. And I get into your little SUV thing and I said, I'm like, I have like mouth diarrhea. I'm like, Cheryl, just so you know, I did not smoke pot this morning. There's a bunch of people out there smoking pot now. And she's like, oh, honey, you're good.
He gets real nervous when he thinks that he's going to get stopped by cops.
So nervous. I've had a lot of incidents. But I wanted to share another funny thing that happened with Cheryl. And
now, this is my favorite story.
Yes. So Cheryl's given me the tour of Atlanta. And if you've never gotten a tour of Atlanta from Cheryl, you got to do it. It's a one-of-a-kind experience. We're driving around, and she's like, yeah, there's a lot of famous people who live in Atlanta, and I've met a lot of them. And I'm like, oh, Cheryl, who are you talking about? And she's naming them. I don't even remember all the names because it doesn't matter. We'll say
Elton
Beyonce
John,
and whatever.
Night.
You know, I was like, oh, that's cool. And all of a sudden, she said, Chip Coffee. Now, for you, I know you all are smart and beautiful people. You all know who Chip Coffee is. He is the best, and I was addicted to his show growing up. And so she's like spouting off his name and she's moving on to the next one. And I like stopped her and I said, shut your dirty H mouth. I don't know if I can cuss here. And she was just like, what? And I was like, I love him. And she's like, oh, I got his number. Hold on a second. Let me call him. And I'm like shaking in the car. And all of a sudden she calls him and it's on her, in the radio. And he didn't answer. so you're not that good a friend, Cheryl. Didn't answer, but all I could hear, and he's just so sweet. He said, hi, this is Chip Coffee, and just leave me a message, I'll call you back. And I was like, man, that could have been the one chance I had. Well, after she introduced me to Nancy Grace, we had just a fun weekend. And before we left, she's like, hey guys, I'm gonna take you guys to dinner. And she's like, we're gonna meet this forensic scientist lady that you guys met. And I was like, okay, cool, we're in her car. And Cheryl, I was like, where are we gonna meet her at? Cheryl said, Cracker Barrel. And I thought, I know dang well that forensic scientist lady had never been to a Cracker Barrel in her life. And I thought, surely she's not gonna do something crazy, you know? And so we keep going, and I keep asking more questions, and I'm just like, something's up. But I didn't know what was up. We pull into this Cracker Barrel, and the most fabulous little man, Chip Coffee, walks on out. And I'm like, I am 6'9", and I'm shaking. I'm like, oh, my gosh. He had a fabulous scarf.
Yes.
And it was the most, I mean, I don't even remember eating. Did we eat?
You called me.
I did call Josh.
I was just sitting at home, and all of a sudden, FaceTime rings, and I don't use my phone to phone call. It's not for that. And I answer it with my brother's name, and Chip Coffee's face pops up on my phone, and I was like, I'm speechless. What do you say to that?
You're
not my brother.
Yeah. So if this is your first time hearing the Mystery Team, this is my older brother, Josh, and this is our best friend, Kim.
Younger.
One of us is older and younger.
We'll I say little brother.
And, of course, our good friend Cheryl. And one thing that's really fun about our Mystery Inc. team is we're really good friends and we're brothers. And what you hear on this podcast is actual conversations of mysteries that we find fascinating. And I think what really works well is that when each episode, one of us has a mystery to present and the other two have absolutely no idea what we're going to talk about that day.
The ride up here was real quiet.
We're real fun on the podcast. But today, I sent Cheryl a text, and I was like, hey, could you bring us a really cool mystery? And she's like, oh, yeah, I'd love to. And Cheryl, you just are so nice, you'll agree to anything. You need to say no to people. Not to me, but to people. So what type of mystery did you bring us today?
Well, Atlanta has one of the biggest mysteries ever in the case of Mary Shotwell Little. And it's a case that I got to work, but I think y'all would find this case fascinating because every time you want to go left, the case forces you to look right. And so in the case of Mary, she was a newlywed. She was in her early 20s. She had only been married for 6 weeks. And she went to Lenox Square. And if you've ever been to Atlanta, the Lenox Mall that you know now didn't look that way in 1965. It was an open-air mall. And Mary worked at C&S Bank, which was the bank that had the stadium, and they backed Coca-Cola, and they backed Delta. It was the bank, okay? So she and a friend left work on a Thursday night, had dinner at Lenox. They parked in two separate lots. So when they walked out, they went in two separate directions. They said, see you tomorrow at work. Friday morning, Mary didn't show up at work. Her husband, Roy, had gone on a business trip and rode with another friend, so Mary had their car. Her manager, now this was 1965, knowing that Roy was out of town, said, well, let me go look for her. So he drove over, you know, to Lenox, and sure enough, found her car. Inside her car was blood smeared on the dashboard, a bloody thumbprint, and then some of her clothing stuffed between the two seats. And she had done a little light grocery shopping, so the groceries were behind the passenger seat. She's just gone, nothing. No sighting, no witness came forward, nothing, for years and years.
And that was what year?
1965.
And you were the officer on the case?
Now, see, they told me earlier, do not use profanity and see how he starts.
I'll get it back for you later.
I was born, but I wasn't working yet. So.
You said you worked it.
I did work it as a cold case.
Oh, okay. I'm just making sure.
A really cold case.
In my defense. Hey, in my defense, if you've ever watched The Golden Girls, which if you have not, I question your life decisions.
Yes.
They're
yes.
in their, yeah.
Yeah, right.
They are in their early 50s. So when I see people, they're like, oh, I'm 83. I would think that they're 49.
Yeah.
Well, so I have no idea how old you are.
Hey, hey, everybody.
There you go.
Yeah. So when this case came to me, it was somebody that was a journalist, and he had worked the case. So I was like, yes, I am all in. I remember my mom talking about this case because there's five girls in our family. And, you know, she didn't want us to go anywhere and park, you know, and not have an escort back to the car. So she was kind of paranoid because of Mary Shotwell Little. Well, here's where the mystery comes in even more. And my sister Charlene's in the audience. She is the one that said, you've got to get on this case. And I was like, okay, I remember a little bit about it, but here's what happened. So Mary, like I said, worked at the bank, the biggest bank in Atlanta, very, you know, prestigious job. She had her pantyhose and one leg had been cut away, clean. And then her underwear, and they were wrapped tight between the two bucket seats. Now that might mean something to some of you, but as we went through the case, it made us think somebody in the military, the way it was rolled. The reason one leg might have been cut, we thought maybe she was bound somehow. Since the blood was on the passenger side, but the dashboard, we thought maybe she had been, you know, punched real quick to, you know, kind of regulate, I'm in charge now from this person that kidnapped her. Where her car was originally parked in the green lot, it had been moved to the red lot. So whoever kidnapped her drove her away, but brought her car back. So that kind of said to us, did this person know her husband was out of town? Mm-hmm. Did they know nobody would be looking for her yet? And the story gets better. So right before she married Rory, remember she'd only been married 6 weeks, she got 5 roses delivered to her job. Well, she worked in the steno pool, so it was one big open room with all these young ladies with typewriters and telephones. Mary gets these 5 roses. She gets up immediately, almost in a panic, throws the roses in the trash can, and runs off to the restroom. Well, all the girls were like, what in the world is going on? Now, a little backstory about Roy, her husband. Roy was not exactly the romantic type. Mm. Roy was kind of an ass. Everybody said that.
We know the time.
And he's one of those folks that's like, well, I guess we can get married. You know, you're an old maid.
Cause, I guess.
Because in 1965, she was already 26, which was pretty late in 65. So he just wasn't a friendly type person. So immediately law enforcement's looking at him, even though he was on a work trip. He was nowhere near. They sent people to look at their apartment on Line Circle in DeKalb County. Nothing. Here's the big twist. 2 years later, no recovery of remains, no sighting, no contact with her family, her mama, her dad, her sister, her husband, nothing. A lady by the name of Diane Shields is found murdered and stuffed in the trunk of her own car in East Point, Georgia. Diane Shields took Mary's place at the bank.
Oh my
dun, God. Dun, dun.
Jesus.
That's crazy.
Before Diane was murdered, she had 5 roses delivered to her at the bank.
Oh, no.
Don't anybody ever send me flowers again.
Yeah, if I see somebody trying to deliver flowers at my house, I will not answer the door.
No one's sending you flowers.
No one. No one. She's our hooker. So.
Yeah, you'll notice Kim is over there hooking on the stage. She's our crocheter.
Hey, I have to learn, or I have to make money to get home somehow.
She's getting her first grandbaby in a few months, so she's working on a little blanket. Yeah.
I'm excited, just a little.
Oh, yeah. So how did you link the roses? Like, did you figure out that this is the same person?
It's really odd that anybody would send 5, right? It's either a half a dozen or a dozen or...
Right.
The florist, we had a, excuse me, I had too much fun last night, y'all. With this time change, my sister and I, that gorgeous rock fire pit, that's the prettiest fire pit I've ever seen in my life.
Oh, yeah.
So we sat out there with many of you. I recognize some of y'all's faces. And all of a sudden we look down, it's like 1:30. And for us, that's 3:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why are we acting like we ain't 85 years old? I have got to go to bed because Shane Waters has decided to have a session at 2 in the morning. So, you know, but my voice is hanging on by a thread. But anyway, here's what happened. There's more to the story, if you can believe that. So the girls in the steno pool, before some of them would marry, when they get the job at CNS, they had a house. And all the girls would live in this house as single women. So if they were from Villa Rica or Tyrone and they moved to the big city, they weren't by themselves in an apartment. So the bank owned this house that all the girls would pay rent to live in. There was also a cabin at Lake Lanier called the Love Shack. And as I understand it from some of the roommates that are still living, that is where promotions were given out, if you understand. So some girl would go as a secretary, spend the weekend. She'd come back a manager.
I've been there.
Yes. So they thought maybe one of the managers, the male supervisors at the bank, maybe had something to do with it. They never could put that on anybody. The weird thing about Mary's car, it had a North Carolina license plate that matched the vehicle. So if they were to run the plate, it would come back as a white Oldsmobile. But that wasn't her license plate. So somebody took the time to get a license plate that, if a cop ran it, would come back matching that car. Mary was from North Carolina. Now, back in the 60s, y'all, before debit cards, y'all that are in your 20s and 30s, we had these little machines that had carbon paper, and you'd put your credit card in it, and they'd run that carbon, and then that's what they would keep for their receipts to get money from your credit card. It took about 2 weeks for them to get their money from you charging at a gas station. Mary's card, her credit card, was used at a gas station in North Carolina. So we know she got that far. It's her signature, because her signature was Mrs. Roy Little. Remember, 1965, the credit card was Mrs. Roy Little. Okay. The man that ran the gas station said, yes, I remember her. She had a dress with flowers on it, and she was bleeding from the face. And the man that was driving, he came to the driver's side to get the credit card. He takes the little clipboard and tosses it and says, sign that. And he said, I thought he was pretty rude, but I minded my own business. Again, 1965. So he recognized there was a woman injured in that car, not being treated well by the driver. So now we have the only sighting, the only credit card that was ever used as far as North Carolina.
My Lanta. Good grief.
And that's not all.
Oh, boy.
So.
I knew you were going to say that. For some reason, I knew you were going to say
that. Probably in palpitations.
It's crazy, right? Because you would think, especially with the two women now, that there's got to be a connection that law enforcement could see. Some of the roommates could come about and come forward with it. Now, this is where it gets a little crazy for 1965. The Atlanta Police Department, Captain Cliff Strickland, took the case over. He's interviewing everybody. Well, once months go by, and it's months before the police know the North Carolina connection, then the FBI gets involved. Jay Ponder is the FBI involved. His claim to fame is he worked the Dr. King assassination. He found the maps that were connected to the assassination. He worked the Temple bombing. And have y'all ever heard of the Emory student? Emory University in Atlanta that was buried alive. Oh, honey. Okay. This child, the kidnapper, built a coffin that had a straw, and he put her in it, and he buried her, and that straw stuck up about that far.
Oh, my Lord.
He had a light bulb that would come on for 30 minutes a day. Other than that, she's all by herself. She could hear animals. She could hear all kind of just crazy stuff. Jim Ponder, he was in one of the search groups, and he thought, we're never going to find her if I'm standing up. he laid on his stomach, and somehow he saw that straw. And do you know they dug her up with their bare hands, and she survived.
Yeah. Wow.
So
nightmare.
Amazing people on Mary Shotwell's case. Amazing people. So again, he found the maps in James Earl Ray's apartment. And because of those maps, he was able to connect the route and some other things. So spectacular, spectacular detectives on this thing. So they're involved now because of North Carolina. Mary, they found out, had a boyfriend when she was in North Carolina. So now they thought, do we have a stalker? Did he come to Atlanta after she got married? Was he upset that she married somebody else? Now we have all these things involved. Mary was not what you would consider a looker, okay? She was kind of homely, but sweet enough. Diane Shields was flawless. Diane, if you saw her, women loved her, men loved her. She just had that it factor. So same. Her murder, I think, affected people a little different because it was more brutal. Mary, we have no body. We don't have anything. We just have a mystery that she's missing. Diane was brutally attacked and, again, stuffed in her own car. So now we have a little bit different approach, but y'all know that could mean more than one person is involved. It could mean that they changed their MO a little. But again, we don't know that because we don't know how Mary was harmed. We know she was bleeding about, we consider the face, because let's say they punched her and busted her nose and she touched it. That's probably what happened on, you know, the dashboard.
So I'm going to ask you a quick question that's sort of not related, but I had the thought when you first started talking, but I'm curious, why did you, like, what made you, what interested you to become working in the CSI area?
Well, again, Charlene is my older sister. Much, much, much older. And as older sisters will treat you, she was in my car. Remember we used to have newspaper boxes that you could put 50 cents in and get the newspaper? It's raining, pouring down rain. And Charlene says, go get me that newspaper. So I do, and I bring it back to her. And on the front, it's the anniversary of Mary Shotwell. And she said, don't you remember Mama talking about this case? And I said, I do. And then the reporter that covered it, we talked, and he said, let's work this thing together. And that's how I got involved. So here's one more piece of the puzzle, if y'all want to know. Let's talk about her mama.
How long did you work on it? How long ago had it been?
I started in 2005.
Oh, wow.
But it's the kind of case you can't shake it. So even if I were to think of something today, if somebody here has an idea, I'm going to go try it. So grab me, honey, and tell me your idea, because there's got to be a way to find her. So here was one of my ideas. Since it was 1965 and we have from Atlanta to North Carolina, there was a chance her bones had been recovered. But at that time, we didn't have ancestry DNA. We do now. So I reached out to her mama. No response. None. I reached out to her sister. No response. And I'm like, this is so odd. You would think they would want to do it, because working cold cases, just like the families y'all have seen here, they will do anything. But I can't get these folks to call me back. So I'm like, this is so strange to me. So I looked up her obituary, because her mama died like maybe a year or so after. I looked up Mama's obituary. Mary ain't mentioned. Now, why would you leave a child off your obituary? But they did. Well, then Jim Ponder and Captain Strickland, they were both living. So I wanted to hear from the original people, because y'all know, if I were to ask y'all, tell me about your wedding, you're going to give me highlights? Well, that's kind of what a police report is. But there's things you know that are not in the police report. Does that make sense? So I wanted to talk to them. When I tell you those two men had immediate recall, names, addresses, dates, times, it was awesome. So Ponder told me that Mama, you know, just didn't really want it to be brought up on the anniversary. She didn't like the media attention. She didn't want any of that. Strickland told me that he went to her when Diane was murdered and said, look, this has got to be a connection. And her mama said, do not keep searching for what happened to Mary. Leave it alone.
It sounds like they know more than what they are letting on.
I don't know. She wouldn't talk to me. So all I know is from law enforcement, mama didn't want the investigation to continue. From the media, she didn't want Mary spotlighted. So I don't know.
Have you covered this on your podcast?
I have not. Just on yours, Sugar.
Oh, well, thank you.
Oh, wow. We appreciate it.
I can take the mom's side a little bit. You know, I've never lost a child. I don't have children, but I've, you know, worked around the elderly for most of my career. And I can see, you know, just not being able to cope with the loss of her child and trying to forget it, just, you know, to get on with each day. But I feel like if there's a chance to have some victory in it.
I'll tell y'all one funny thing. So everybody told me, again, Roy, he's just an ass. You know, he's no good. He just, somebody you got to look at. Well, of course they looked at him. Well, I believed what Ponder and Strickland told me. So Roy was really never on my radar. But I thought, you know what? I better talk to him. Because if I don't, people are going to say, well, you didn't really do everything you could have done, right? So I called him and I told him who I was. Before I even got my title out, he goes, you're calling about her, ain't you? I said, I am. And he goes, listen, all I can tell you, I've been married to this one for 40 years and I ain't killed her. Jesus. I said, well, that's valid. So if you ain't killed her in 40, you sure didn't kill her in only 6. I understand. So that was Roy. I mean, the way they described him was absolutely accurate.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Sounds like a real ass.
Yep.
Kim, they said we can't cuss.
Whatever.
My ears, Kim. Keep it clean.
Oh.
So, Cheryl, what year did you start your podcast?
I started December of 2022.
So, Cheryl and I have been Facebook friends since we met, and I remember when I saw you start that podcast. Do you know how surprised I was? If you don't know Cheryl well, she's not great with technology. And
That's not very nice.
Lie.
She's the first to admit it, and I want you to tell all of our friends here the story you told me that you probably don't remember, when you were showing us around your office and all those things, and you told us about this guy who had accused you of something. Do you know what I'm talking
about? I do. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, Lord. If you send her a video, she'll never watch it. She may not know how to play it until she gets to someone.
You're not being very nice to her.
I wish my children were in here because they would be cracking up. I cannot get to Netflix on our own TV. Okay. Who's with me? Okay, I like this. It's on. Okay, there's like 4 remote controls. I cannot do it. It makes no sense to me. I don't know the difference in Wi-Fi and the other thing. I don't, okay? So it's a big thing at my police department that they always say, we're going to put you over the, you know, cell phone dumping information. Well, you are never going to solve nothing if you do that. I'm just not great at technology. I miss that whole thing. I'm never going to develop an app. I hardly can work them. So he's absolutely right. So I have a stalker. I hope that crazy heifer's in here right now. But every now and then, she decides to call the police department and make these outrageous claims of things I have done to her. Okay.
Oh, Lord.
Here's one of them. She calls and she says, I live in Texas, and she remotely broke into my computer and deleted all my files. Okay, the detective taking this phone call is like, who? Who did that? Cheryl McCollum. He's like, ma'am, can you hold just a minute? Like, there's no way. And to give you a little backstory, they got these brand new phones. The chief of police was so excited. Every phone was gonna be a video call, okay? Because normally when you look down and see chief of police, you're like, man, right? We can't do that anymore because that's a video. We have to go, hey, chief, you know? So it's a fancy phone. It's got all these functions you can do and all this. Well, mine don't work. It's a paperweight. It's a piece of crap. And they're like, what's wrong with it? How do I know? I didn't invent the thing. It just don't work. I can't get it to do anything at all. And they're like, well, put in a ticket. And the tech guy will come. And I'm like, well, I want my old phone back because this one, y'all wasted a lot of money. So this young kid walks in. He looks maybe 21. He's got a clipboard. He is not happy to be there. And he's like, are you McCollum? I went, yes. And he's like, what's the problem? I said, this thing don't work. And he went, have you tried something, something? And I went, I'm just telling you, it doesn't work, okay? He walks over, y'all, and there's a button. And he goes, da-da-da-da-da. And the volume comes on. So that's why my phone wasn't ringing.
Oh.
So that's my technology, okay? That's my level. So when she starts making these claims, my department's like, we don't even need to have an IA. There is no way she did that. She wouldn't know how to break into your computer, ma'am. She can't turn hers on.
So you need your own personal IT person like I have in Shane. He's the one that teaches me how to do it all.
He's our IT, our tax guy. He does better.
I'm just saying, if you miss that window, you get behind real quick. You do. And that's why when you have a team, and I preach this to people, you want people on your task force that are younger than you. We had a cold case. Y'all aren't going to believe this. We had a cold case. And this detective out of South Carolina, she's one of the best I've ever worked with in my life. She went on to be a part of NCIS, and she's killing it over there, honey. But she could not find a landlord of this young girl that went missing and was later found murdered. She could not find him anywhere. So I'm doing one of my classes. She comes, she's talking to all these young people, and she's saying, this is just a case. I can't get it out of my head. This guy's got to be somewhere. Now, she's worked this case 11 years. There's a girl in the back, maybe, again, 21. She goes just like this. I found him. What? And that detective was like, what do you mean you found him? She went, well, he lives at whatever, whatever. She gave him gave her the address and everything. She said, there's an app called Stud or Dud. So if you're single, you can look somebody up and find out whether or not his sorry behind is married.
Noted.
Can't say I've ever heard of that.
Keeping
one.
Keeping that one.
So I've been with my husband forever and ever. I don't need no stud or dud. I already got my stud. You know, Rachel, she's been married to her wife for 20 years. She don't need it. She ain't looking for no stud, no how. And just like that, a younger person found somebody. So that's what you need on your team. I'm telling you.
I loved it, too, because before she told us the story, Wendy and I got into the car, and she takes her phone, and she's like, can you make us go to where we need to go? I was like, yeah, where are we going?
Do it for
us. And then she told us that story, and I was like, yeah, that's, you probably could defend yourself in court. I could see that for sure.
Yep. So sure. Sad. So sure. Sad.
Be like someone accusing me of sleeping with their wife.
So Josh and I have had a good time this trip.
Oh, yeah.
We were both like, oh, look, there's Vince Velasquez.
Oh,
oh look, there's Callahan Walsh. I mean, oh. There's some good-looking men here, y'all.
Yeah. She showed me a video earlier of her with three men, and I had already sent two pictures of them to Shane and Kim. I was like, my stars, look at, oh, I love Crime Con. Oh.
When we got here, we got on the elevator, and there were two army men who get on the elevator. And I feel like this happens everywhere we go. We
it
went
does.
To a convention once, and it was like a heavy lifting.
It was a muscle man competition.
Yeah. But Kim and Josh were all, and you know, the elevators here are all glass. These men get on, and you just hear Josh go,
No.
Kim's like, oh. Josh does this purring thing. I can't
do
it.
I'm a big fan of Eartha Kitt, so if you know I see a man who is good looking, I'll purr just a little.
Meanwhile, I'm like, oh, God, I just want to disappear right now. All these mirrors in this elevator. This is what it's like traveling.
God, sometimes God does give with both hands, and I'm just grateful for it.
Well, Cheryl and I know about that. Not everyone is a 10 and has a perfect body like we do.
Do what we do, honey.
I mean, God is good, isn't he?
Yeah. All day.
Yeah, yeah.
All the time.
So, Cheryl, if you guys didn't go to crime camp, Cheryl joined us, and I just wanted to tell you a short, fun story because I feel like you all need to walk away knowing this. So, crime camp was really cool. It was earlier this year in Florida. which I'm not an outdoorsy person, so the idea of camp, my idea of camping is a Holiday Inn with bad Wi-Fi. You know, like, that's my idea of camping.
I thought he'd been abducted when he said he was going camping.
Well, when they have the pictures of, like, the tents and stuff, and I was like, that's not a me thing, like, all week. But then they were like, oh, it's going to be at a hotel that has air conditioning and bathrooms. I'm like, okay, fine, that's fine with me. So we get out there, and they have these crime scenes all set up, and they were teaching us how to process them. But there was a very important part of the instructions that they had left out, by accident, I'm sure, where we were all put into these small groups, and there was a group over by the water. Now, I'm from Indiana, northern Indiana. We don't even have poisonous. There is one brand of poisonous snakes. I've never seen one or I would move. But anyway, there's no, like, dangerous animals or anything like that. So we're all out there going around looking for these crime scenes. And this group starts going down by the water because there's this, like, slide-looking thing. And they're like, maybe someone fell in. And they're monitoring the water. And all of a sudden, I don't know if it was you, but someone who had an accent like you, so I'm assuming it was you, all I hear was, no, don't go over there. And I was like, oh, my God, who's screaming? And she's like, get away from the water, get away from the water. And they're like, is alligators?
Alligator.
Yeah.
Alligators in the water.
Yes.
That was not on the instructions for crime camp. I want you to know. And I thought, maybe they're just joking. Like, maybe this is a part of a skit. You know, like, don't get near the water, it's just alligators. Maybe someone was eaten by an alligator.
Part of the experience.
I ain't never seen an alligator.
Okay, fun fact, that person did have an accent just like me. It was my sister, Sharon. And she was a sixth grade teacher her whole career. And when I tell you these crime con campers were into it, they were looking for evidence everywhere. Well, this particular group was convinced we had put something in the water. So they were literally fixing to wade into there. And Sharon, she lost her mind. And she said, let me just tell y'all something. Everybody gather. Now she's taking over crime camp, right? Y'all gather up. There is no body of water in Florida that doesn't have a gator in it. Well, then everybody's like, well, forget this. We're going to go back and, you know, check the cabin forever. Yeah.
Wendy and I literally was the farthest area.
What happened in like an hour?
Well, you tell it.
Here comes the alligator sunning himself.
Yeah.
Big as Dallas. And Sharon went, told you.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
And I'm convinced, like, in all seriousness, I'm convinced they probably would have gotten to the water. Because we were digging, I mean, looking in trees. There was probably some thin, fit person climbing a tree or something.
Yes.
Meanwhile, as soon as I learned there's an alligator, I'm a wimp. And I went to the farthest crime scene that was underground.
We'll take this one.
Yeah. Yep. I'm going to go up here and chill out up there.
Yeah.
But Cheryl is such a good teacher and a good talker, and she is just so talented. And I wanted, like, one of the things I walked away with beyond picking out maggots out of a pig's butthole, which...
I have video, if anybody wants to see it.
It sounds crazy, but in all honesty, it's so good to know, because whenever I work a cold case or I see it or I hear about it, I know exactly how they are aging the crime scene because of animal activity.
Absolutely.
So it was disgusting, crazy... This crazy person took a video of it, and I was like, if that ever, she's allowed to date Kim.
Gotta do what you gotta do.
It's blackmail.
She's getting her money's worth.
Yeah, so I have to be somewhat nice. Yes, yes.
Exactly right.
I have to be somewhat nice to her. But anyway, she's my best friend. We've been friends for many years. But anyway, so beyond the maggot piece, Cheryl is just such a good teacher. And one of the things that really struck me, which was so true... And, you know, they teach it in school, and it's why there are shallow graves. No one's ever burying people 6 feet under. And I want all of these friends out here to walk away to know what you shared with us in that class.
People are lazy. Listen, they start strong. I'm going to bury your ass, right? And they're mad, and they start digging. Well, you know, about 25, 40 of these, they're like, I don't know if I'm that mad anymore.
Your hips starts hurting.
Yes. People think they can do it. They cannot do it. So every time from now on, and you hear on the news, she was found in a shallow grave, you just go, lazy bastard. Yeah. It's what it is.
Yeah, I love that.
The other thing that I remember most about her for that was we were talking about crime scenes and stuff, you know, and she looks around and she says, don't anybody step on my evidence. I was cracking up.
But I also loved when she told us about shallow graves. She looked around, and as serious as could be, and I think you really scared that little intern girl, the little student. She was like, oh my gosh, this lady is.
Yeah, she thought you were crazy.
Cheryl will keep a straight face as she tells you something. And so with the straightest face as could be, she looks around and she says, so all you women, which I was the only man in the room, all you girls marry someone fat, lazy, you know, and I love that.
Don't have to worry about them killing
you. I love that, yeah.
Listen. 88% of the time a woman is murdered, it's a husband, ex-husband, boyfriend, or ex-boyfriend. 88% of the time. So the more boyfriends you have, the more danger you're in, honey. So if you've been with one or two people, you're good. But if you're out here hoeing around, you in danger, girl. Some of y'all know what I'm talking about.
You're safe, Kim.
So, it's okay. You're good. It's all right. You're good. I'm good. I'd rather be
She'll live a long time.
There's nothing like a best friend, right?
No, yeah. So
I'm actually glad that Cheryl's here because she's been getting a little bit of the brunt.
I know. Well, it's because I'm faced this way and I'm so tall, I'm like slouched over. So
he's nicer to me, but I know too much.
Listen, not only did he look me in my face and say, shut your damn whore mouth, the next crime con, he made me a button.
I did. Yeah. So we walked around the whole time with that on a button, and people would be like, what's that button? Oh, don't worry about it.
Don't worry about it.
Because you try to be professional, and you know. And one thing that's different between Foul Play, which is the crime podcast, and Mystery Inc., is that we do like to make light of things.
Yep.
Life is hard, you know? And I started.
Got a balance.
Yes. And I started that crime podcast in 2008. It is so easy to lose faith in humanity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've worked with a lot of family members, and I've had very dark nights. I've become very good friends with all of them.
Yes.
And one thing that I really value with Mystery Inc. is that we can sit down as friends, brothers, and have conversations about an old crime case or Bigfoot. You know, I ain't never heard a story about Bigfoot killing people.
That's right.
You know?
That's right.
He's a gentle giant.
Yeah. So I just love those type of stories. Alien abductions, sometimes people are getting probed. That's on them. I don't know nothing about that, you know. But
I keep
still,
trying to get abducted, but they just get interested.
Yeah. I mean, what people do to each other is much more than what any animal would. Like, it's just crazy to me. So, in all honesty, we started this show as just a way to relax and have...
Y'all do a fantastic job of that.
I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Fantastic. Cheryl has never watched this show, and she is just so kind.
It's the best show. Listen.
It's my favorite.
I started an app so that I could download it and keep it and watch remotely. It's fantastic.
I believe you did.
But let me tell you the truth about Shane Waters a little bit. I've never called him, needed him, had a question or help with something. He wasn't right there. And I think that speaks to him because, you know, people ask me a lot, doing what I do for a living, how am I not jaded? How am I not burnt out? Well, he's a big reason why. Everybody here, if you have been just walking around this weekend, look at the amount of people that have given their DNA trying to solve a mystery of a missing person. The amount of money that was raised last night in 15 minutes, they raised over $10,000 in 15 minutes. I mean, that's insane to me.
Yeah.
But that's y'all. This is that community.
Yeah. And that's so true. I was having a conversation with a good podcaster friend of mine last night, and one of the questions we were talking about is why podcasters do Crime Con? Mm-hmm. And for me, it's not necessarily to meet people or to network. Is to rebuild the faith. I was talking with Cheryl before we came out here, and one really interesting thing about podcasting is oftentimes it's done behind closed doors. You know, when I narrate Foul Play, I'm in a closed room by myself in a bunker, in a basement, you know? So you lose faith in humanity telling stories and being able to meet people, meet Cheryl, and meet in everything. I mean, that just makes the entire experience different.
100%.
Yes, I love that.
And you've got so many loyal people that adore y'all and want to see you in person. It matters.
Yes.
And like a weekend like this, honey, I'll live off this for a year.
Oh,
are
yeah.
you kidding? When I'm on duty in the morning at 7 o'clock and don't nobody want my autograph or take a picture.
Right.
Yeah. I'm going to scroll through my phone and just cry. I miss these people.
When you hear, you know, you read their comments on everything, but it's people person. I always say I'm better in person. And
yes.
I prefer, and it was great meeting everybody. And I am thrilled at this crowd. I kept telling myself I'll be happy if at least one person's in the crowd.
At 9 o'clock.
We really do appreciate y'all coming here on day 3 at 9
Tremendous.
In the morning.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, I have an interactive thing that I would like all of you to do for me right now, and that's to take your phone out. And Lord Cheryl, do you know what a phone is?
I got a phone.
Okay. Do you know how to Google search?
I sure do.
Okay, perfect. I want all of you right now to Google search this for me. Put in Shane Waters, S-H-A-N-E, Waters with an S at the end, W-A-T-E-R-S, and then put U-K.
Brace yourselves.
And then enter. And as you read a couple articles, I want you to just picture that CrimeCon is also...
This is awesome.
Well, not if that's your name.
Right.
CrimeCon is also in the UK.
Can I just read the first thing I see?
Oh,
please
yeah.
Please do.
Go ahead.
Pervert. Caught in horse stables. Told the police, I have an unusual habit.
Do you see the chickens?
Fabulous.
The chickens are the first thing that he had attacked, right? This is in the UK. Mind you, the co-host of Foul Play is in the UK.
That is solid
foul
gold.
Play. Chickens. Foul play.
So, yeah. He has had a lot of chicken issues. So, CrimeCon is in the UK. When that whole thing first came out, like when you are a podcaster, I'm sure if Cheryl knew how to do this, she would do it. But you could put a Google alert out. Anytime your name or podcast is used, it gets flagged. When that story first came out in the UK, it got flagged. I mean, I was getting all these emails because of foul play and because of Shane Waters. I thought someone was pranking me.
And with chickens and foul play?
Yeah. I thought someone was pranking
me. That is solid gold.
Well, I was like, oh my God, someone is like playing the most horrible prank, right?
Those poor chickens.
And
that is awesome.
When I went out to the UK.
Sorry, me and Josh were talking.
Well, I'm thinking about getting a chicken rub. But
you have to get it.
I might.
Oh my God.
But anyway, the thing is, so I'll get to that in a second. I went out to the UK, and do you know how paranoid I was? I told Nancy, who's in charge of CrimeCon UK, I was like, look, if the police call, just come get me. I'll explain it later. Like, first time in the UK, I thought they are surely going to pull me aside and ask me some questions.
He ate vegetarian the whole time.
For sure. But I was so paranoid about the whole thing. And I want you all just to realize how many people in the UK... follow the story of this man. Because, I mean, he does crazy story. And then as you Google him, if you push images, all of me is mixed in with all of him. And all of my podcast stuff is mixed in with all of his stories.
Jesus.
And so I get emails almost daily from people in the UK who, and I love it because, of course, my co-host is English, and so I always, like, read emails in her language. Like, in her language, she would kill me for saying that. In her tone.
The Queen's British.
Yeah, so every time I get an email, they're like, do you realize that I just spent 4 hours today, I'm so posh, aren't I? 4 hours today going down a Google search because I thought this man had a podcast called Foul Play. Like... So it's just crazy, but I've never covered it. I've never talked about it. We've talked about it once on the podcast for Mystery Inc. But here's the reason why. It's so funny to talk about it and make light of it, but that man has hurt animals, and some of those chickens died. Like, he has a serious mental health problem. He has 2 children. Crazy, sad story. And there's one thing that I know, and I watched your session on the first day with the animal guy. I'm not great with remembering names or titles, but the animal dude... Great, great session. I really loved it. One thing that I always know is that we can tell stories about what people will do to each other, and you'll have people listening. When you bring in an animal, suddenly it's thrown.
Absolutely.
And a perfect example of that is when Don't F With Cats came out.
Oh, yeah.
Kim and I love watching new documentaries. As soon as it drops, we're like, boom, on, you know. And we're watching this documentary. It ends, and we're like, let's find another one. Well, Don't F With Cats just came out. We're like, perfect. I don't have cats. I don't really care for cats. I'm allergic, whatever. So I didn't even think about what was going to be seen. We just saw true crime. Perfect. We turn it on. Mind you, we've seen every documentary. Everything. In the first, like, couple minutes, you start seeing, like, this man put this cat in this bag. And as quickly as possible, Kim and I are like, nope.
Nope, nope, can't do it, can't do it.
And we were trying to find that stinking remote. Yep. I think we just unplugged the TV and we just sat there. And then I remember just looking at Kim and I was like, we are awful human beings that we cannot watch that. But I have two animals now. I have two little dogs. Finally. And of course, I'm going to talk about them because I've never had an animal. But, like, for as an adult.
I'm an uncle, finally.
And I got a little, my first one, her name is Betty White. She's a Cavapoo. She is a darling. And if you don't have an animal, you need to get one because they are just so good. We do not deserve them.
No.
100%.
Precious.
Every time I come home, she's so excited to see me. Kim, you don't do that for me. You are, she's like, oh, good, you're here, get out.
She does need to be let out, though.
She does, yeah, yeah. But they are just so good. So I got a second dog named Ruby, and it's because I don't want three more. So what I did was I just merged the names of all the other Golden Girls. Ruby and Estelle Getty.
They're actress names.
Yeah, yes.
That's awesome.
But the reason I did that is because Josh and I, our grandma helped raise us when we were really young. And we watched the Golden Girls all the time. And one thing that I have learned doing true crime since 2008 is that when crime gets hard and people are doing bad things with each other, turn on the Golden Girls.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I turn on every night. Yeah, yeah, for sure. And there's just something about it. It just is so warming, and it just renews my faith in humanity. So I watch it all the time. And so when I come home and Betty White is just so thrilled and tickled to see me, I just think about the Golden Girls, and we just sit there and watch the Golden Girls together. Dun, 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 dun. We are just two old women in my house.
Love
it. Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah, but all that to say, like, animals are so good, we don't deserve them. So, like, you had mentioned that in your presentation on the first day, and I immediately thought of my two dogs that I really miss. I wish I would have brought them with me, because next year they're going to come with me.
Little babies.
But, yeah. But, yeah, so with a little bit of time we have left, Cheryl, I wanted to ask you a very serious question.
That's probably not.
Lord, help us.
You guys always take away my punchlines. Do you believe in Bigfoot?
Okay, so I'm a crime scene investigator. So I've seen the footprint castings. I've seen some hair samples. I've seen witness statements. The thing that fascinates me the most about Bigfoot or Sasquatch is that there's no continent and there's not one group of people, indigenous, Native Americans, that don't have stories of Bigfoot. So I believe a little bit.
I like that. There is a museum close by here.
Yes.
I'm going to have to
I've been to the one in Tennessee.
Now, you
for research purposes.
Now, is it true that your son wanted you to go out and search for him?
Yes. When my son Huck was young, he got all into Bigfoot, and we had to have an expedition. So we went to Tennessee, we went to the museum, and we went out in the mountains looking for him. Absolutely.
So this will be news to Josh and Kim. I've never told them this.
Okay.
I was being filmed by this documentary crew one time up in Michigan. Never thought about a Bigfoot, nothing. I grew up, so my grandma has passed away, or she would be whooping my butt for talking about her like this. But when she would put her teeth in the morning and take her hair curlers out, she'd let me watch Unsolved Mysteries as a kindergartner. And yeah, so all to say, like, there wasn't a lot of Bigfoot showing up by Robert Stack at the time. So I didn't really, I wasn't exposed to it until we watched Scooby-Doo. But all this to say, though, I was out in this field next to a train track in Michigan, cold as can be. I can't stand cold. Can't stand hot either. But anyway, so we're out in this field next to these train tracks, and this crew, I'm telling you, sometimes these film crews are crazy. They're all fit and thin, and they just think we can walk 10 miles. I hate it. Anyway, so we walk all the way out there to this field, and they're filming us. It's later at night. And there's this weird noise. Never heard it. Like a screaming noise. Really weird. And I was just, they just kept filming. And I'm like, okay, guys, hold on a second. There is some wild animal out here. What is that noise? And the local that was with us was like, well, we believe that could be what we believe is a Bigfoot. Like, there's creatures out here. He didn't have to say anything else. I walked my happy butt the 3 miles back to the car. These people are crazy. We right. don't have those type of things in north, like the foothills of Indiana.
That's right.
It's flat.
What does he do after that when he gets to the car? He calls me. Like, I'm going to be able to do anything, what, 4 hours from
I
you?
Locked myself in the car.
Locked yourself in the car. He was in a bad signal.
Yeah.
So he kept dropping the call, and he was freaking out because he thought somebody was going to come and get him. Yeah. And then he would be going on and on and on, and all of a sudden he'd stop, and I'm going, Shane, are you okay, Shane?
Did he get you?
Look, like, for me, I'm a very tall person. Big, thick.
Big feet.
Yeah. So my idea, like, when they said that, and I'm walking the 3 miles back, and, you know, just like you said about the digging thing, after 3 miles, I'm not as much worried about the Bigfoot. But I just thought maybe they'll recruit me.
Oh, God.
They'll think I'm one of them.
You're
you know,
bold,
like what?
A bold
that
one.
Or that, or they'll be like predator. Yeah. You know, like I don't want to be around when that happens.
Yeah.
Same film crew, and I'm telling you, when they released their little project, I threatened them a little bit. I was like, look, I mean, because these are LA people. These are thin, short, itty bitty little
healthy.
Things. And I was like, guys, if this ever sees the light of day. Because that wasn't the... So, I went with them to West Virginia. Ain't never been to West Virginia. Ain't going back. Love... If you're from West Virginia, love it. We go out there. This is our first day of filming was out in West Virginia. We get out there. And I don't know what it is about film crews. They want to film at night and do the night vision thing. I can't see in the day, let alone at night. You know, they take us out in this state park, no cell phone service, nothing, and we gotta walk back to where they think this guy worked. And so we're back there and we're talking, and one of the cameramen who had night vision goes, shh, guys, there's a bear. I ain't never seen a bear, never thought I would come into it. I'm not a wild person. What did Shane do? Shane took off running. I knew the general direction that our car was in. I knew it was about a mile run, and I took off. I get to the car. I'm in survivor mode. Like, I'm like, oh, my God, bear got him. Got into this SUV.
R.I.P.
And I just want you to picture this film crew coming. About 20 minutes later, they come to a locked SUV at night, no lights at all, and they're knocking on the door trying to figure out where I'm at. And I'm in this. This is so embarrassing. I'm inside, laying on flat on the ground, quiet as could be. Like, I am, because my thought was, if it comes, I gotta play dead. You know, like, there has to be a survivor that survives this experience.
Right.
So they get there, they find me in this state, and they're not thrilled that I ran. So we all get in the car, and I'm like, oh, guys, it's so good to see you. And meanwhile, I'm like, I looked for everyone's phone, couldn't find it, no one had service, like, we didn't have the keys, you know, so I was going to be out there for a while, so I'm glad they got back. But anyway, so we all start driving away, and the guys were a little mad at me, and they're like,
you left us.
Why would you run if there was a bear? And I was like, no one told me what to do.
You run
I ain't never seen a bear. And the thing is, it's like, if any of you ever are with friends who are not wilderness people like me, if you go into a situation where there could be a bear or a dangerous animal, you should tell somebody what you should do. One of us has to survive this. But my favorite question that they asked me, one of the guys, just he's processing this whole thing, and he said, how did you know you weren't running toward the bear? And I said, you know, about halfway through my run, because, I mean, I ran. I don't run. I ran. And I said, about halfway through, I realized I don't know. I know the general direction of the car. That's safety. That's where I'm going. But I don't know where this bear is. And I said, the best thing I could come up with is if I run fast enough, if I run into that sucker, he will be so scared that this Bigfoot Sasquatch pounded, and I would have just kept running.
Yeah.
So that was, needless to say, whenever I go with filming people, I'm like, what animals could we run into? Is there anything dangerous? Are there snakes? I'm not hiking. I'm just not a hiker.
After that happened, I think you must have, I can't remember if you came home or if you called me later that night or whatever, but the only thing that he tells me is, I survived a bear attack.
Oh, God. I'm alive.
I'm a survivor.
You know, like, growing up. Do you want to elaborate on that just a little bit?
Shane was always...
I survived a bear attack.
Shane was always the tallest kid in our classes growing up. We're just a year apart, and you know, everybody has a fight or flight. Well, Shane is definitely the flight type of... You know, anytime anybody would pick on me, I'd be like, well, you don't know my big brother. And I'd look up at him expecting, you know, a little backup. He'd be takeoff running. You ever seen the Road Runner from the Looney Tunes? It's kind of like that. You just see a smoke outline of his body. So I grew up to be the feisty one.
Josh and I, of course, are a year apart. And I lied at the beginning of this. He's my 1 year younger brother.
I just tanned a lot growing up, you know.
But nothing makes him more upset being a gay man than being told or asked, are you Shane's older brother?
Oh.
I love it. Love it. I just get tickled to pieces. But I understand why now. We are sharing a hotel room. He has all this stuff that he puts on his face. If all you women in this group, which this is mostly women, I see a couple men there, blink twice if you're not okay. They're probably here with their significant others, forced. But anyway, I realize the reason that he gets so upset, and it's because I admit I have one product that I use for my hair, my body, and my butt. Your husbands probably do too. But that's just, you know, if you go to the men's section, there are 4, 5, and 1s bottle. We're like, we're lazy, perfect.
Yep.
Got it going. You know, we just care about the smell. That's it.
That's blasphemy.
Yeah. Josh, meanwhile, he'll be in the bathroom for hours. He's got a spray and
I'm electrocuting my face. Yeah. That little wand thing, so rolling needles on it.
So the moment someone's like, you must be Shane's older brother.
Oh.
I just hear the world just sigh for
now,
a moment.
Now, listen, I've lived. I used to smoke cigarettes, and I was a big tanner in the early 2000s, but now I regret it all in my mid-30s. I'm like, ooh, them crow's feet and these 11s right here. God bless.
Well, I'm blessed because fat don't crack. So.
I'm trying. I keep eating them honey buns, trying to fatten up. I'm like,
now,
I'm afraid of Botox. That's my first one.
Now, Cheryl. You have been working in this field for such a long time, and you are such a good storyteller. I want to know, have you ever been in a weird scenario where you just think, this person's stupid? Like someone you are interviewing, they're just doing stupid stuff. Like, there are stupid criminals all the time. You have to have a good story for me. You can change their name. You could call them Shane.
She's like, well, right now, this man on stage is not.
Right? I'd like to get off this stage.
My first thought is, he's trying to get me fired. How about if I just tell you an interesting, unique story, not maybe somebody that was
That's
stupid.
A good way okay. of wording that.
She's a polite Southern lady, Shane.
I'll try to keep my job another week or two. So, y'all mentioned a few things that made me think of this story that I haven't thought about in a long time, but... One of my old partners back in the day was Deborah Burke, and Deborah was just fun and just vivacious and wasn't afraid of nothing. So we get a call, this is way back in the day, and we were looking for a victim that had to be in court today or a serial rapist was going to get away. This particular victim was not unknown in the street, so we were going to crack houses looking for her. Well, one that we got to that we knew she would go to often to shoot up had been boarded up by local code enforcement. But, you know, there's always a way in if you want to get in bad enough. So there were 3 of the old silver Oscar the Grouch trash cans. So we turned 2 upside down, put the 3rd one on there, climbed up, went into the window, dropped down. We're geniuses. Thank you. So we're going through this house and... Empty room, empty room, empty room. There's nobody. And we're like, this is so weird. We get to the last room, which would have been like the master bedroom on the first floor. The boards, there's just enough crack at the top of the boarded up window that sunlight is coming through. This sunbeam is hitting perfectly. This man in the corner, he looked like he was 127 years old. Clearly, he was dead. And if you knew Deborah, you would understand this part more than anything. She turns to me and she said, I ain't doing the paperwork. And I, trying to be funny, said, well, you know I ain't doing it because I can't spell nor can I type. That's when we had typewriters. And I said, it'll take me, you know, twice as long. So now we're just kind of joking with, you know, each other, knowing we've got to call this in, knowing they've got to come, and we've got to explain why we're in a crack house. And so all of a sudden, y'all, he sits up and says, get out of my house.
Oh, my God.
Well, Deborah's version of the story is that I made a new door. Because it also dawned on me that in our genius, remember I told you we dropped down, we couldn't get back out through that window. God. So I did effectively make a new door. But when you were talking about the cartoons, yeah. Deborah would always tell people, I looked up and there was just this mark.
I love
but
that.
But I got out of his house, honey.
I have a good one for you. So when my freshman year of college, same year I started my crime podcast, I wanted to do a ride-along with a police officer. I've never done it. I thought it would be so fun. And so I get, this is Indianapolis. We're from a small town, so it was very interesting. We saw a lot of interesting people. The squad car, I don't know, he must have had a different version, because on Cops, they look, the squad cars look big, but I'm a big guy. And so I got squeezed up all into his little car. And in the back, there's like a cage or something, you know? And so you can't put your seat back any further than what it was. And so my knees were in the dash.
That's right.
So about an hour into this, he starts talking to someone. And he had a thing that he would make me stay in the car until he would give me the thumbs up. And then I'd be able to get out of the car. So he goes and he's talking to these people. Well, this girl flees. And I didn't know what to do. I never saw, you know, what do I do, you know? And I thought, oh, my God. And he takes off. Well, I saw he had dropped something. And so after he had left, I'm like, well, I'll get out and pick that up. And this is like, I'm like, you know, like this is a crazy moment, you know? And I get out of that car, and I'm telling you, my legs were numb. And I didn't realize it. It was because it was in the dash. As soon as I got out of that car, fell, and I busted my nose and everything.
Oh,
like, I was
no.
So I'm like terrified. I'm like, oh my God. So I go and I go pick that up and I get back in the car and I'm like trying to clean up, you know, like I'll die with no one knowing this story. He comes back, that people get arrested and everything, and he comes back and he sits down and he's like, everything okay?
No.
Looking straight ahead, nothing, you know. And I was like, yeah, everything's good. I had a little nosebleed is what I said. And he said, just so you know, there were people filming over there. I came back. They said, there's a guy who fell out of your car, just so you know. And I was like, well, that's weird. I don't know who that was.
Who that was.
That's weird.
I did the same thing at a funeral once during the eulogy. I went to stand up, and my leg was asleep and just fell right down. What a way to pick up a funeral.
The thing is like for tall people, these are like real things that, you know, happen. And your legs, I had no idea. To this day, every time I get into a small car, I just think about that. And I'm like, oh God, don't fall, Shane, don't fall. So we have just a few more minutes left. If you guys have any questions about anything, if you just want to say hi, you're welcome to. There are two mics in the room, so you're welcome.
Any numbers of any bearded men?
Yeah, you are welcome to do that.
I know my first year at CrimeCon, I was a little nervous because I didn't know the crowd to expect. And then when I got here, I was like, oh, it's mostly women. I'm my crowd. Yes, I love it here.
Hi, I have stage fright, but I just wanted to say the prosecutors have a Bigfoot theory for D.B. Cooper.
That's fun.
I like it.
And I love you guys. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank
you. Appreciate
it.
Hey, y'all. You know I love you guys. I have two questions for you, Mac, for Mary. One, did you ever see her birth certificate? Like, was that mom really her mom?
Yes.
Okay. Do you have any theories that she's maybe buried in North Carolina somewhere?
One of the theories, it's not mine, but one of the theories is she escaped to an Indian reservation and stayed there, and her mother knew it, that they were helping her get away from Roy, that she had changed her mind.
And that's why she probably didn't want to talk a lot, yeah.
Right. That's one theory. Again, that's not mine. the five roses to me are the biggest indicator. And the fact that Diane took her job, that's just something I'm not going to be able to say is not a connection.
Right.
And again, in my world, we don't believe in coincidences.
And Shane's right, y'all. Crime Camp will never be the same if Mac doesn't ever show up again. So.
Agreed.
Thank you.
Howdy.
What's up, you guys? This was really fun, by the way.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I just have one question. You left me on a cliffhanger. What did he drop that you picked up?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, the police officer?
Yeah.
Oh, Lord help us.
It was a gum wrapper.
That's all I needed.
Hey, you didn't pollute.
No, and when I saw it, in all honesty, I thought it might have been evidence or something, you know,
sure,
that he has, like, put in a pocket or something.
Yeah, right.
And it was so important.
So he was going to solve the
now,
case.
Now, if I ever tell this story again, I'm going to lie. It was the evidence they needed to convict them.
It was a big bag.
It was a bag.
Oh, yeah. But it was just so... That guy was such a good sport about it because he didn't look me in the eye. He was just like, yeah, those people over there, they filmed you. I was like, it just tickles me to pieces now. But I was just, I mean, you know, you're just trying to be a strong man, you know, as I am.
No, I don't know.
Right? So I was trying my best. Made a fool out of myself.
That's all I needed. You left me on a huge cliffhanger.
Sorry about that.
Thank you.
Hey, Josh, you sure you won't come home with me?
I come with a lot of luggage, but I do make good fried
Shane
chicken.
Said you could come home with me.
I did.
Give us more room.
$5.
Hey, yeah. Hey, y'all, you want fried chicken? I live in Kentucky. Come on down.
Oh, Pert, we're right above you.
Right. So I already know this answer from Josh because I got to meet him and talk to him at your all's table out in the
yes
row over there. So who's your golden girl? Like, I know Josh.
Oh, mine?
Yes.
Sophia.
Me too.
Sophia. So my first time, this is like my personality. My first time in LA, I was out there for this big podcast thing. And the first thing I did was I rented a car and I drove out to the Golden Girls house because it's filmed
yes
in a neighborhood in LA. Now, I'm 6'9". The people who bought the house apparently did not know that it was the Golden Girls house.
They
I don't know how.
They put a big gate around it.
So a big gate, like not just a gate, but like privacy fence gate.
Yes.
But what they did not expect is the world's biggest Golden Girls fan would come. And I didn't fly to LA not to go see the Golden Girls house. I walked right on up to that window and I mean, not the window, but the fence. And my head is like right here. And there is this poor woman sitting on that porch. Drinking coffee, and she just started, and I was like, I am so sorry. And all of a sudden, you just see my phone come up. I'm on the sidewalk. I know my rights.
I still have the picture.
Yeah. And then the second thing I did was I knew Estelle Getty was buried there
yeah
in the Hollywood cemetery, the famous one. Only grave I saw there. And I FaceTimed Josh. And Josh, bless his heart, he had like all this beauty stuff on because it was later. And he's like, oh, hey, what's going on? And he saw Graves behind me. He goes,
Estelle Getty.
You are not. And I was like, I just wanted to introduce you to Estelle.
Oh.
And he just cried and cried and cried.
So that's
Estelle is mine, for sure.
So, Cheryl, which one are you?
Oh, come on. You know I got to be Blanche. She's the only one I
yes
can understand.
Uh-huh.
You got it, of course. Birds Feather Kim, what about you?
Estelle.
I've always been a Blanche, but as I get older, I'm more and more Dorothy Spornak, I swear. I catch me telling my
Listen,
mom, Shady Pines, Ma.
When you all were talking about that woman that had everything, the first thing that popped in my mind was Hubba Hubba Zing Zing.
Oh, yeah.
She's got everything.
So I was out in Europe after Crime Con. I did this whole Europe trip, and I love to send people postcards.
Oh, yeah.
And Kim, we've been friends for way too long. And we are so,
wait,
so mean to each other.
Don't know why I punish
and
myself.
If you don't know us, you will hear us in public, and you are just going to think, they are abused. That's an abusive friendship. But that's just how we...
It's honest.
We just love each other so much. So anyway, I was sending her all these postcards, and I was in Rome, and I was like, she is going to be so tickled to get her postcard from Rome, because she broke, she posed, she ain't going to Rome. So I thought, I'm going to send her a postcard. Didn't get her anything else but a postcard. So in the mail, and I was so tickled to do this, I put eat dirt and die trash. That's all this
that
postcard
was it
said.
Didn't sign his name or anything.
No name, no nothing. And I'm just like, all these post people are going to see this and probably not even know it's a Golden Girls
what
reference.
What a monster.
And she gets it, takes a picture, and goes, you are just so lovely. Thank you so much. I love you, too.
Let Rick ask his question real quick before we're done. Go ahead, Rick.
My question is what I know all your listeners want to know is, when is Basement Rick going to be back on?
I don't know. What do you think, Rick?
This is our Basement Rick. If you ever listen to Mystery Inc., he joins us sometimes.
He lives in Kim's basement.
He lives in my basement.
Yeah. Kim is a single, ugly woman, and so she just doesn't have any men in her life.
In my basement.
And so she just, Rick is a good friend of ours, and we joke that he just lives in her basement. It's just harmless, but it's so nice, too, because he's there. You know, she's just an older woman living alone.
He puts basalt in all the time.
She doesn't have to go down the basement stairs.
We got one more over here real quick.
Yeah.
My question is about Mary and the flowers. Did you follow the flowers or to see where they came from and all that?
Well, both of them threw the flowers away, but I called a friend of ours, Charlene and I, in a neighborhood we grew up in. A man owned the largest florist in Atlanta. So I called him because, number one, I thought 5 is unusual. Like, would you deliver that today? Well, he said today they wouldn't deliver just 5. He said, but back then, absolutely. And most people would come in and pay cash. That's how that worked. He said there would be no record of it. They didn't keep those kind of things. So we could not ever trace back where the flowers came from. None of the girls in the Steno pool ever went and looked at the card or anything. I wish they had, but they didn't. Most of them thought they knew it wasn't Roy, but whatever it was just made her so upset, they just never even talked to her about it.
5 flowers, that's a cheap man.
Mm. 5 roses.
Yep.
And we never knew what the 5 was about. We tried to connect 5 with all of them, but, you know, we couldn't.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
So we don't have much time left. Actually, we're over time because we are so naughty.
We figured
that is not
be.
That's typically us, though.
I have just a quick 1-minute story about my first time to Denver. Same freshman year of college, first time to Denver, loved it. Here for a forensic science convention, all of these forensic scientists, real famous people, are all doing these explanations and things. I loved it. And I was volunteering as a student, and there was this guy, and you know, sometimes forensic scientists can be real boring, you know, but real smart and great. And so this guy was up there, real dry sense of humor, and he was talking about serial killers in the area, and I thought it was so fascinating. And as I'm watching it, he's telling this crowd, and without missing a beat, no laughter, no nothing, he was like, you hear that, Shane? You better be careful. And one thing I forgot to mention is the guy he was talking about was a cannibal. And he was making a joke because I was such a big person that I could, like, you know.
Beat him through the window.
Yeah, exactly. But no one in the room caught the joke. They were like, what's going on, you know? And so he, like, fumbled with it. And then afterwards, it was this very awkward scenario. And I was like, no, it's okay. I got the joke. Just don't joke next time, you know?
And don't eat me.
Yes, yes. Well, thank you guys for coming in.
Thank
we really
you so
appreciate
much.
It. Thank you very much.
Bless all your hearts.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger. For the ones who get it done.